Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and chavrut Yair Dana Askband, our daf of the day, Masechta Bav Metzia, daf Ayin Bet, page 72. So from the top of the daf, we have, you know, a more another new case or the equivalent on the halachic elements of borrowing money with interest from a non-Jew. Tanarbanan Yisrael shelava ma'ot min anachri beribit. So we have specifically a Jew who borrows money, actual money, from a non-Jew, and the non-Jew is going to charge interest. Who's gafan alav b'milva? Right. So what happens? We've got a situation here where he adds the amount of interest to the principal. He makes it just like one main debt. Okay. Zakam b'milva. That's how. That's what he's. Then the non-Jew converts. So just to make things complicated, right? Because he borrowed from a non-Jew. The non-Jew charged him interest. Now he's got a Jew who's not supposed to be charging him interest, but the sum total has already been consolidated. Im kodem shenitgayer zakfan alav b'milva gove et hakeren v'gove et haribit. V'im la'achar shenitgayer zakfan alav b'milva gove et hakeren v'eino gove et haribit. So the question is, what's the timing? When did he establish this loan to be once lump sum? Was it before he converted? In which case, he can collect the non-Jew, the person who began as a non-Jew, can collect both the principal and also the interest. But if it, meaning like it's because he had already consolidated into the one debt. But if it's not consolidated and he converts and then he consolidates, then he can only collect the principal, but he can't collect the interest because at that point, from the moment he converts and becomes a Jew, he can't collect interest from another Jew. What's particularly interesting about this and the given here of it is that what he did in his previous life as a non-Jew isn't upheld. There's no what we would call a grandfather clause to say, well, he wasn't Jewish at the time that he established that interest, so he should be able to collect. It's the collecting that becomes the key point, as opposed to the terms being set being the key point. And likewise, you have a case of a non-Jew who borrowed with interest from a Jew. Okay, and then the Jewish lender consolidated the loan so that it will all be just one lump sum. And in the meantime, the non-Jew converts. Now, the question of timing matters. If he hasn't converted at the time, by the time that the Jew has done this consolidation of the debt, of the loan at plus interest, then the Jew, he can collect the whole thing. But if he converts, if the non-Jew converts, and then the Jew does the consolidation, then that same Jew can no longer collect the interest that he was charging because, again, he can't collect it from the Jew. And again, it seems to be the collection point is what matters as opposed to the time that the terms were set. I would say that, you know, what does it mean, you know, when which happened first, right? What's the order here? So let's note that as much as the text puts these things in very much the same place, presumably they're not really taking place at the same They're not taking place in the same location at the exact same time. You have to figure out which day, which hour, which, like, when did what happen in order to be able to say, ah, so now we know you can collect the interest or not. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Nachrish Lava Ma'ot Misrael Bribit, Ben Kach Uven Kach, Koveta Karen Vegoveta Ribit. Rabbi Yossi says that if a non-Jew borrowed money with interest from a Jew, and then he converts, and Rabbi Yossi's position is that either way, meaning whichever came first, it does not matter. The Jewish lender can collect the principal and also the interest. Meaning he's not agreeing that it depends on the collection point. It matters, you know, either way, the Jew can collect the interest. Amar Rava, Amar Rav Chista, Amar Rav Huna, halachic Rabbi Yossi. And they paskin like Rabbi Yossi in contrast to this Breita, which is a very strong statement, which is you can collect interest, which might theoretically be a Torah prohibition, certainly Jew from Jew. to say that, well, but he began as a non-Jew, it's going to be acceptable. I'm a Reva, my time is Reb Yossi. So now we're going to understand what Reva thinks underpins Reb Yossi's reasoning. The reason you can collect the interest is it's almost an obligation, I would suggest. The Gemara doesn't say that. I'm just suggesting it now. That the concern is you don't want to say that he can... No, you don't want anyone to cast aspersions on the conversion, to say that the reason this guy converted is so that he could avoid paying that extra money. So you collect the extra money, even from the guy who converted, to make it clear that that's not why he converted. He wasn't getting out of paying. He was converting because he wanted to convert.
So I actually loved this scenario. It was so Gemara, right? Like, you know, of course it has to do the scenario of what happens if the convert actually converts. And I'm almost upset that I didn't think of this scenario yesterday when we were introduced to the whole idea of a not, you know, that you can charge a non-Jew interest. And like we ourselves didn't come up with the question, well, what if the non-Jew decides to convert? Like it's so obvious. And yet I didn't think of it, but I love that the Gemara did think of it.
Yeah. And like you said, it's not only is it so Gemara, the question, the answer, right? The answer of, no, you have to charge him interest because otherwise you would cast aspersions on the conversion. Like that's the, I don't know, like the most thumbs kind of way, right? Where you use your Gemara thumbs to say, well, right?
Yeah.
And he
I
has
agree
to get the
you.
Money.
Yes, I think that's like definitely the best part. Okay, I'm going to move on now to a Mishnah. We have a new Mishnah on this page that's going to continue to talk about sort of these types of arrangements and when we're concerned about interest or, you know, with certain types of transactions. Ein poskin ala peirot. Somebody cannot enter into a forward contract and pay in advance for produce. Achi yetzei hashar, until there's an actual price for the produce. Yatza hashar. Once there is a price poskin, then you can get into this type of forward contract where you pay in advance. But afal pi she'ein lazeh, and even though this person with whom the buyer's contracting doesn't have the produce actually in stock, yesh lazeh, somebody else does have it. So even if the particular seller doesn't have the produce yet to sell it, but they make this arrangement with the set price, it has to be that it's available somewhere else. And so therefore the seller has the option to use the money that they get to buy the produce at that price because he could obtain the produce somewhere else if he needed to. Then it goes on to say, Hayahu techila lekotrim, if he was one of the first reapers, right? Let's say the seller was one of the first, reapers, and therefore there actually isn't a price yet. Posekimo al hagadish. You still can enter a contract with him on a stack of grain that he has in his possession, meaning if at the seller has the produce in his possession at the time of the agreement, we allow this type of forward contracting, this advance payment for food, because even though the actual delivery will be later on, right, it's as if the buyer still took ownership of the produce itself. Since the produce, right, is it's like they bought it at the beginning. So as long as there's a stack of the produce there, we still allow it to happen. Then it goes on to say, Ba'al ha'avit al shel anavim, right? And also if we have, if there's a vat of grapes, right, you can enter to a contract on a vat of grapes that's in his possession for delivery of wine in the future. Ba'al ha'ma'atin shel zeitin, or a vat of olives, which will be delivered later as oil. Balabitzim shel yotzer, or potters, they're called like clay balls, which later will become pots, right? Like they just have the balls of the clay, which later will be formed into something else. Balasiyad mimishkio bakivshan, or limestone that he has sunk it into the kiln for later for delivery of lime. So the point is, all of these are things where you're buying it before it's fully formed into what you're actually purchasing, right? So you're purchasing wine, but you're allowed to enter that contract as long as the seller has the grapes. Uposekimo al hazebel, and one can enter into this forward contract with a seller for manure, kol yimot hashana, all days of the year, because that's something that's always, there's always a constant supply of. So even if the seller doesn't actually have it in stock, right? We know that he'll get it very quickly. Rabbi Yossi says, Ein poskin ala zevel. One cannot enter a forward contract for manure. Ela im kein haita lo zevel ba'ashba. Unless the seller has manure in his dung heap, right? He has to actually have it, some possession of it, but it can't be for future possession. The chachamim matir, but the chachamim allowed. Uposekimo b'sha'ar ha'gavoa. And if the buyer wants to avoid a loss, right, let's say because the price actually decreases, he has to stipulate with the seller that it needs to be for the best price. Rabbi Yehuda says, Afal pi shelo pasakimo b'sha'ar ha'gavoa. Even if the buyer didn't stipulate with the seller that he wants it for the best price, yachol amar, he can say to him, tain li kazeh. Right, give it to me at today's price. Oh, tainly at mauti, or give me back my money. So you can put in a stipulation that's basically saying, you know, if the price goes lower, I still would like my money back. So the Gemara is going to start off by discussing or elaborating a little bit more about this idea of this forward type of contract. Amar Rav Ashi, Amar Rav Yochanan. So Rav Ashi said in the name of Rav Yochanan, Ein poskin al shar shabashuk. One cannot enter into a forward contract on the basis of a current market price. In other words, when the price is of an item is likely to go up and down, it's going to fluctuate, right? There's basically, you can't say that there's actually like a prevailing price. So the Gemara now wants to understand what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. Amar le Rabbi Zera le Rav Asi. So Rabbi Zera said to Rav Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, afilo kadur mus hazeh. Did Rabbi Yochanan mean to say, even an established price like that of the central market? So the Drumas was like the big market in a large city where produce is sold in very, very large quantities. So at the beginning of the season, when there's only a small amount of produce that's there and there hasn't been a lot of trading that took place yet, right? But you know, in the small markets, but there would be some trading sort of in the large market. Once that large market starts the trading, that's kind of set the prices for all the other markets. So what we're trying to say is Rabbi Yochanan even saying that like a place like the central market, because that kind of always has a set price. Amarle, he answered them, Lo amar Rabbi Yochanan ela b'shuk shel arayot. Rabbi Yochanan said this rule only in terms of a local town market. Belo kiva etrei ayhu, right? And whose prices are not firmly established. The Gemara goes on to say, leman desal, the salik datin mikara, but according to what we originally thought, the Amar Rabbi Yochanan afilu kador mus hazeh, that Rabbi Yochanan said his ruling is even like the price of the central market. Elam atina diktani. Then our Mishnah, which teaches Ein poskin al ha'peirot, one cannot enter a forward contract for produce ad sheyetze hashar until there is a prevailing price. Yatza hashar, but once there is a prevailing price poskin, then you can get into this contract. But how can you find such a case, right? The Mishnah basically says we allow contracting, this type of forward contracting, on the basis of a prevailing price. And the Rabbi Yochanan comes and he says, right, even if there's a prevailing price in the central market, right, you can't set it. So then how does this Mishnah make any sense at all? So the Gemara answers, Matninan, right, one could be, the Mishnah could be referring to, B'chite, Dachlive v'arive, of the storehouses and ships, demashuch treehu tapi, whose prices last longer. So we're talking about a price that kind of is established late in the season when the stored produce, right, becomes available for sale or the ships start to bring in the produce. When there's is an abundance of produce in the market, then the price will basically stay for a line. So even if you have this side of forward contracting, right, you could, it would be prohibited based on the central market price, but it would be permitted on the basis of the storehouse and ship price, okay? So that's how they you know, because I think it is a little bit confusing, like, how do you actually establish what that actual prevailing price is? From here, the Gemara goes on to discuss the case of, they quote a price here of what happens if there's actually two concurrent prices for different produce, because of different qualities of the produce, which is a very interesting discussion. So just, you know, pay attention to that and how they exactly, you know, sort of try to figure that out. But essentially, they try to still come to sort of like a prevailing price. But that's also like a very interesting Mishnah. So I think this is a great example of like we have a Mishnah that on the surface seems very easy to read, but once the Gemara starts discussing it, we see that it really has many layers, and some of the concepts as the Mishnah presents it is not so straightforward.
I mean, I think we always say, right, that's part of the beauty and the need for the Gemara.
Oh, 100%. I think this is like a great example, right? Like, you read the Mishnah and you're like, oh, okay, you set the prevailing price. But then the Gemara comes along to be like, you know, setting a prevailing price is actually quite complicated. And here's why.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also it highlights once again how halacha applies to areas of dealings that we don't always associate with halacha, meaning halacha applies to everything, not just our usual ritual stuff, for example.
Well, that's our DAF discussion for the day. Break us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Nate Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this DAF at our Talkie Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.